In the kitchen, Mrs. Horner placed a steaming mug on the table and smiled across at me.
"Will you sit down along with me husband and have a bit of breakfast?"
she asked. There is nothing like an early carving to whet the appetite, and I nodded readily.
"Oh, that's very kind of you. I'd love to."
It is always a good feeling after a successful delivery, and I sighed contentedly as I sank into a chair and watched the old lady set out bread, butter and jam in front of me. I sipped my tea, and as I exchanged a word with the farmer, I didn't see what she was doing next. Then my toes curled into a tight ball as I found two large slices of pure white fat lying on my plate. Shrinking back in my seat, I saw Mrs. Horner sawing at a great hunk of cold boiled bacon, but it wasn't ordinary bacon. It was 100% fat, without a strip of lean anywhere. Even in my shocked state, I could see it was a work of art, cooked to a turn, beautifully encrusted with golden crumbs, and resting on a spotless serving dish. But fat. She dropped two similar slices on her husband's plate, and looked at me expectantly. My position was desperate. I could not possibly offend this sweet old person, but, on the other hand, I knew beyond all doubt that there was no way I could eat what lay in front of me. Maybe I could have managed the tiny piece if it had been hot and fried crisp, but cold, boiled and clammy, never. And there was an enormous quantity. Two slices about 6 inches by 4, and at least half an inch thick, with the golden border of crumbs down one side. The thing was impossible. Mrs. Horner sat down opposite me. She was wearing a flowered mob cap over her white hair, and for a moment she reached out, bent her head to one side, and turned the dish with the slab of bacon a little to the left to show it off better. Then she turned to me and smiled. It was a kind, proud smile. There have been times in my life when, confronted by black and hopeless circumstances, I have discovered in myself undreamt of resources of courage and resolution. I took a deep breath, seized knife and fork, and made a bold incision in one of the slices, but as I began to transport the greasy white segment to my mouth, I began to shudder, and my hand stayed frozen in space. It was at that moment I spotted the jar of Piccalilli. Feverishly, I scooped a mound of it onto my plate. It seemed to contain just about everything, onions, apples, cucumber, and other assorted vegetables jostling each other in a powerful mustard vinegar sauce. It was the work of a moment to smother my loaded fork with the mass. Then I popped it into my mouth, gave a couple of quick chews, and swallowed. It was a start, and I hadn't tasted a thing except the Piccalilli.
"Nice bit of bacon," Mr. Horner murmured.
"Delicious," I replied, munching desperately at the second forkful.
"Absolutely delicious.
And you like my Piccalilli, too?" The old lady beamed at me.
"I can tell by the way you're slapping it on."
She gave a peal of delighted laughter.
"Yes, indeed."
I looked at her with streaming eyes.
"Some of the best I've ever tasted."
Looking back, I realized it was one of the bravest things I've ever done. I stuck to my task unwaveringly, dipping again and again into the jar, keeping my mind a blank, refusing grimly to think of the horrible thing that was happening to me. There was only one bad moment when the Piccalilli, which packed a tremendous punch and was never meant to be consumed in large mouthfuls, completely took my breath away and I went into a long coughing spasm. But at last I came to the end. A final heroic crunch and swallow, a long gulp at my tea, and the plate was empty. The thing was accomplished. And there was no doubt it had been worth it. I had been a tremendous success with the old folks. Mr. Horner slapped my shoulder.
"By gore, it's good to see a young fellow enjoying his food. When I were a lad, I used to put it away sharpish like that, but I can't do it now."
Chuckling to himself, he continued with his breakfast. His wife showed me the door.
"Ah, it was a real compliment to me."
She looked at the table and giggled.
"You've nearly finished the jar."
"Yes, I'm sorry, Mrs. Horner," I said, smiling through my tears and trying to ignore the churning in my stomach.
"But I just couldn't resist it."
Contrary to my expectations, I didn't drop down dead soon afterwards, but for a week I was oppressed by a feeling of nausea which I am prepared to believe was purely psychosomatic. At any rate, since that little episode, I have never knowingly eaten fat again. My hatred was transformed into something like an obsession from then on. And I haven't been all that crazy about Piccalilli either.
Chapter 40.
Well, do you want Jobba, don't you?
Walt Barnett towered over me in the surgery doorway, and his eyes flickered from my head to my feet and up again without expression. The cigarette dangling from his lower lip seemed to be part of him, as did the brown trilby hat and the shining navy blue serge suit stretched tightly over his bulky form. He must have weighed nearly 20 stone, and with his red, beefy, brutal mouth and overbearing manner, he was undeniably formidable.
Well, yes. Of course we want the job, I replied. I was just wondering when we could fit it in.
I went over to the desk and began to look through the appointment book.
We're pretty full this week, and I don't know what Mr. Farland has fixed up for the week after. Maybe we better give you a ring.
The big man had burst in on me without warning or greeting, and had barked,
I've a fine big blood oster, Geld. When can you do him?
I had looked at him hesitantly for a few moments, taken back partly by the arrogance of his approach, partly by his request. This wasn't good news to me. I didn't like castrating fine big blood osses. I much preferred the ordinary cart colts, and if you came right down to it, I had a particular preference for Shetland ponies. But it was all part of living, and if it had to be done, it had to be done.
You can give me a ring if you like, but don't be hour long about it.
The hard, unsmiling stare still held me.
And I want a good job doing, think on.
We always try to do a good job, Mr. Barnett, I said, fighting a rising prickle of resentment at his attitude.
Aye, well, I've heard that before, and I've had some bloody balls-ups, he said.
He gave me a final, truculent nod, turned and walked out, leaving the door open.